Today is the final day of the NATO summit here in Washington. At the top of the agenda this week, sustaining and expanding support for Ukraine. Not on the official agenda, concerns about the U.S. election and its potential outcomes. Earlier today, I spoke exclusively with Chancellor Olaf Scholz of Germany to discuss how NATO leaders are preparing to tackle some of the biggest geopolitical challenges facing the world, what he thinks about his counterpart, President Biden, and the prospect of a return to power by Donald Trump. Chancellor Scholz, welcome to the NewsHour. Thank you for being here.
Hello.
Let's begin with Ukraine, which is clearly top of the NATO summit agenda while you're here. You and others resisted language in the communique to extend Ukraine an invitation to join NATO. Can you explain to us why that was? Are you worried that that would send Russia a signal of some kind of escalation?
No, it's not about this. We are supporting Ukraine. As you know, Germany is the second biggest donor of also military support to Ukraine after the United States. And we will continue to be strong in our support for Ukraine. And during the war, no one expects Ukraine to enter NATO. It is now that we do what we can say today. And this is the language which we worked on in Vilnius, which was the right way of saying that there is a path to NATO for Ukraine. And it is irreversible, as we say today. I think this is the right message.
You know, of course, Russia is watching with great interest the messages from the summit. Dmitry Medvedev just tweeted this morning saying, commenting on this language about the irreversible path of Ukraine, and he wrote this, quote, "For Russia, two possible ways of how this path ends are acceptable. Either Ukraine disappears or NATO does. Still better, both." What's your reaction to that?
Oh, the comments of Medvedev are becoming more and more strange, to be very honest, but in a way, it shows that our language is absolutely clear. And so it's good to hear this after we have talked in the beginning about the language of the NATO meeting here. It's a strong message about the irreversible path, and it's the right thing to do.
If the goal continues to be to get Ukraine everything that it needs to win this war, then there is the question of why you haven't yet authorized sending the Taurus missiles, those long-range German cruise missiles, because the U.S. has sent their version in the ATACMS, the U.K. has sent their version. So why isn't Germany sending yours?
As I already said, Germany is the second biggest supporter of Ukraine, also when it comes to weapons. We delivered everything which is important for air defense. Three Patriot systems, the biggest number from all countries, and we invite many others to do more. We delivered howitzers and tanks, and we continue to do so. So this is our way of doing support. And our decision is that we will not deliver weapons which have a long range and where we do not have enough control about what will happen if they will be used at aims that are far away.
But I take that to mean, just to put a clear point on this, you would not trust Ukraine not to use those longer range weapons in a way that you fear could escalate the conflict.
I trust them, and we are working together intensely, and we took all the necessary decisions for Ukraine that they could defend their country, also together with the United States, giving them the chance to be more effective in defending their own country so that they can go against Russian troops.
We know that you and the other NATO allies and the rest of the world are watching this upcoming U.S. election with great interest. It was last month you said that you believe President Biden is likely to win a second term. You've said this week that you don't have any concerns about his health, as other folks have raised questions. We have, since that debate performance, though, we've seen the biggest shift in polls here in the U.S. away from him and towards former President Trump that we've seen to date. Do you still believe that he is likely to win?
I'm not someone that is able to say how will be the outcome of American elections, but I think it would be a big mistake to underestimate the president. He is successful in doing the necessary things, for instance, in organizing the NATO alliance, and his leadership was very important in the last years and months, and also preparing this very meeting here in Washington. And he is also a successful campaigner. So I think it is the American people that will take a decision. And I just can tell you from my perspective, as someone that is speaking with Biden, he is very focused, and he is very intensely doing what a president of the United States has to do for leading the alliance.
You've been in a sort of unique position this week. You've been meeting with him, you're watching him work. Have you seen any moments at all in your latest interactions with him that tell you in any way he is not up to another 4 years?
No.
And can I also ask, did you watch the debate that has created so many headlines here?
Yes, I did.
You did?
To be honest, everyone in Europe is very much interested in the politics within the United States because mm-hmm. the United States are the strongest superpower in the world, and it's our most important ally, so we are trying to understand what goes on.
And as you watched it, nothing that you saw gave you any concern or reason for pause?
I think that he made his points, and he argued why it is necessary to work on a good cooperation globally without friends and allies of democratic states, and he was very clear and focused on questions of national politics.
Mr. Biden, as you mentioned, has been a strong and a vocal defender of NATO, of its role in the world. How much do you think is at stake for the alliance in this upcoming U.S. election?
The alliance is important for the security of the United States, of Canada, and of all the European states on the other side of the Atlantic. I think it is necessary that we understand that though there might be differences between the states joining the alliance, it is not about the basic principles of how to run a country and about democracy, as I said.
Under a potential second Trump presidency, however, does your view on that change? I mean, this is someone who sent mixed messages on the alliance. He's previously called it obsolete. He's explicitly warned that the U.S. would not step in to defend NATO allies who haven't met that 2% of GDP defense spending target. What happens to NATO under a President Trump?
I met during all the years many people from the Congress, bipartisan, from all parties. I will say that there is constantly a clear understanding of both parties that NATO is in the interest of the United States, and this commitment is very strong. So I think that this is how American politicians who are in the security community think about this question, and I'm sure that this will continue for the next decades.
Do you believe Mr. Trump shares that view of NATO's importance?
In the end, this was the experience we had during the last presidency of Trump, but it is nothing where I will speculate about. I'm just knowing that Republicans and Democrats are very clear in this question.
Have you yourself been in touch directly with former President Trump?
I met him when he's president.
Yeah. And not since then? That's a no.
I met him when he was president.
Okay.
As a mayor and as a finance minister and vice chancellor at that time when my predecessor was visiting together, going together with me to these meetings of G7 and G20.
But not since he left office here in the U.S.?
No.
I do want to ask you about the other major war, and that is, of course, Israel's war in Gaza. Your foreign minister recently just condemned Israel's strikes this week that were at both tent areas for displaced Palestinians outside a school in southern Gaza. Those were called unacceptable by your foreign minister, and she said that the repeated attacks on schools by the Israeli army must stop. The question is, how do you get them to stop?
We have a clear understanding about the situation. The first is that after the brutal attack of Hamas against Israeli citizens, Israel has the right to defend itself against Hamas. And right from the beginning, we were very clear, saying that this has consequences for the way of doing this war against Hamas, reducing the civilian casualties. We discussed about the need for humanitarian aid to get to Gaza. We discussed about the question of West Bank and that there should be not an enlargement of settlements and that there should be no attacks against Palestinian civilians in West Bank. We were very clear on the perspective, and we are clear, that there must be a two-state solution which gives the chance for Israel and a Palestinian state consisting of West Bank and Gaza to live peaceful together.
At the same time, Chancellor, there have been expansions of the settlements in the West Bank, and there have been tens of thousands of civilians killed. So what can be done at this point?
We have to be clear, and as friends of Israel, we have to be especially clear. And this is what we do, the United States do, as far as I see it, and many others also. So that's what we can do.
I'd like to ask you also about our colleague in journalism from the Wall Street Journal, Evan Gershkovich, who is being held in Russia. There's a convicted Russian assassin by the name of Vadim Krasikov who remains jailed in Germany. And there were reports that you were willing to trade him for Evan and for Alexei Navalny when he was alive before he ended up dying in a Russian prison. Can you confirm those reports? Were you willing to make that trade?
You don't really expect that I will be very clear on questions like this. We are very active to help those who are imprisoned in Russia. And this is an activity we are doing together with others. And yes, that's what I will say here.
I guess the question is relevant today because there remain so many Westerners and Americans jailed in Russia. If it was a possibility to trade someone like Krasikov before, could there be a deal on the table to trade now for Evan Gershkovich and Paul Whelan, who's also still in Russia?
As I said, there are aspects of international politics which have to be done in a very pragmatic way and without debating them. And this is what you should have in mind. So we try to get prisoners out, but it's very difficult and it's nothing for speculating about this.
But a trade is potentially one way these men could be freed. Is that fair to say?
It's not fair to say, because you're trying to get an answer from me where I said I won't give you an answer.
Fair enough. Chancellor, I want to ask you about issues back home in Germany and across Europe. The rest of the world has been watching recent elections there with great interest as well. You expressed some relief that the far right in France did not prevail in their recent elections. Germany is, of course, reckoning with its own rise in a far right party in the Alternative for Germany party. How worried are you about the rise of those far right forces in Germany?
I'm worried about the rise of far right forces all over the world, and especially in many of the rich countries. We have to understand why this is happening. We have always to understand that the big majority of people is not agreeing with them in all these countries. But we have to develop a strategy which is making it more sure that the support for them will decrease. But it is a time where we have to organize that the change will be successful, not just from an abstract perspective, but also if we look at the individual perspective of people who look at themselves or those who are like them.
I found it interesting, in reaction to the success of some of those far-right parties in recent European elections, you called it a decisive turning point in politics, and you attributed much of that to really a public loss of trust in mainstream politics. So how do you, and other leaders facing this similar challenge, how do you get that trust back?
We are living in times where there is a lot of insecurity. So hope and the view that there is a good perspective for everyone is key for fighting against this right populist parties. I think we have to go away from this idea of a zero-sum game. We have to be more optimistic about future. This is the basis for getting our societies together and for social coherence, which I think is important.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, thank you so much for your time, for being here today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.